Welcome to the Decentralized Consciousness Podcast and another episode of the Sovereign Soul series with Matt and Caleb. So today we are jumping into a topic which has been confusing for me for quite some time, and it has to do with the illusionary threats versus real threats to our survival or our existence. And when we talk about fears of being poor, fears of coming homeless, like the worst thing we can imagine in society, to become an outcast. And many times these fears are the very basis or the foundation of the career we do. Like, we're trying to avoid these nightmare scenarios that are told to us through parents, friends, and films. So it's like society is just trying to avoid bad things from happening. And this is then the fear patterns. And then we try to earn money, try to be a good citizen, try to fit in with people, try to fit in at the job, and all these things. They are all fear patterns from the underlying fear that we don't want to be homeless or whatever. Everyone has personal sort of horror stories. What happens if you don't apply yourself to society and play the role of a good citizen? And if we look at the spiritual teachings of most cultures and the yin and yang, we know from there that the only fear is our own shadows. It's inner demons that are projected in the external world. So from that lens, it's stupid to act from fear, because the fear is inside of us. And this external fear is just a projection. And people who are familiar with spiritual teachings probably have thought these kind of thoughts, that actually everything I'm avoiding here is just my inner aspects. But still, it's difficult for us to just stop doing things for survival. So we are stuck in this contradiction of knowing that we are acting on projections. And when we do that, we are holding the projections in place, because we are confirming their status of real, while it's not real. So it's an illusion, or it's a projection that can be solved inside. As long as we keep on acting on those fears, they will be sustained, or maybe even become stronger. And then it can feel sometimes that we are going backwards, because we are making the fear patterns stronger instead of healing them. On the other hand, if we were just stay home and see them as illusions, then very real changes will start happen in the physical reality, and we will maybe start moving towards those nightmares that we are avoiding. So where do we draw the line? Like, which fears are okay to act on, and which should we not act on? This is the question for this discussion today. So let's see what we can come up with.
Yeah, a couple things are coming to me. I think on the spiritual path, you will be shown your deep-seated fears. You will be shown aspects of yourself that you have hidden away for a long time that were too painful to look at in the moment. But now that you're embarking on this conscious journey into those sorts of things, you can encounter them with a much broader awareness and see what they mean from lots of different angles. But sometimes those fears are so terrifying that you give up. You are running all of these algorithms in your rational mind to try to make sense of these fears, and none of them make sense. None of them can hold those fears in a space of love. And so you give up. And then in that moment of giving up, all that is left is like a surrender to a higher aspect of yourself. And so fear has a way making us give up more control to something in us that knows what to do, which is the pulling away of what you think you should do. Because you thought about it all and nothing was working, so you just have to let go. And that letting go is when life can actually move through you sort of organically without you trying to micromanage everything. And then the other thing was that if you're wandering around in the woods and this bear comes up to you and you're struck with fear, your senses are heightened and you become hyper present and aware of what's around you in a really high fidelity. And so when these fears come up and are presented to us in the external reality, maybe just holding on to those stories of what fear is and its purpose and the things you can learn from it, that can make us welcome it more, thereby dissolving it quicker.
Yeah, for me, It has been clear that the old consciousness, the fiat consciousness, so to speak, there we are doing things to get things. While in the higher consciousness, we trust in our path, in the universe, and everything like this. So we don't need to do things to get things anymore. But instead, the contribution we give to the universe is to be the best version of ourselves and to be true to ourselves and express our abilities and gifts and passions. So by allowing ourselves to be who we truly are, we attract abundance, not necessarily from the actions we do, but it just comes with the state of consciousness that we are in when we are our true selves. So those different settings can make it confusing for a person on the spiritual path. When we are still immersed in the fiat consciousness, there it's of course that we should do things for money. And then we come in contact with the people like us, where we say, no, it's not about doing things for money, it's about doing things that you love. And you indirectly then earn this way. And to understand then, I'm doing this because of fear. I'm trying to earn money because I'm avoiding the nightmare of becoming homeless and so on. And then when do we feel ready to let go of that? Like I said in other podcasts, I use the system of saving up in Bitcoin and then free myself from that. So I created time for myself to really establish myself in the higher consciousness. So that's one way to do it. Another way is to, like I did before, it's like you do part-time. So you're half of the time in higher consciousness, half of the time in lower consciousness. Then you're doing some things for fear. So you're holding on to some and you're amplifying them with your actions and you notice. And you just choose that lifestyle. But what has come up for me then is this about being an anonymous person. And why am I anonymous? And again, then it's sort of fear-based. It's based on this idea that we are living in this fascist world where they are punishing, imprisoning, hurting people who speak truth. And in this case, what is reality and what is illusion? Because it does keep on happening all around. We know many examples of people that speak out and then they get punished in different ways. And then we can look at, is this because they attracted this experience? Or is it just part of the world? Or part of this time, rather? Like, how long should I stay anonymous? Like, the world has to change? Or is it me that has to change? Like, does it start with me taking down my barriers and stop acting from my fears? And is that how we bring about a new world Or is it better to hide in the shadows and spread the message of higher consciousness like in a secret society?
Yeah, we are co-creating this experience with everyone else here. And if I imagine a scenario where nobody was anonymous and everybody spoke their truth, then the armies wouldn't be big enough to do much about that. Yeah, it's like we have our individual energy bodies, and then we're within this collective energy body that we're a part of. And each time we take actions that aren't from fear, that aren't from hiding, then we shift our energy while simultaneously shifting the energy of the collective. Then there's this sort of average that is established in the group mind of the collective. And after that tips to having more unconditional love than fear, then individuals will no longer need to be brave. But paradoxically, if we want to get there, then some people at the margins need to start that domino effect. Yeah, the authorities, the law, their role is protecting people from letting their fears rise to the surface by silencing people who would speak truthfully and trigger people. It's almost like an immune system. Because if people stopped acting from fears and worries and all of that, then they would really change how they live their lives. And that's a psychologically big deal for people. And so this pushback, it's this sort of like motherly protection archetype against people's true expression.
This is a hard topic to talk about. It's like walking in mud or whatever you call it. It's like, so, and when I wrote a topic to you guys, then I forgot about it. It's like a hidden topic that is avoided by so many collectively that we are really going against the mainstream flow here and trying to look at this from different angles. Can you feel that, guys? It's
Oh yeah.
not flowing.
Yeah.
It's like viscous. It's like, yeah, very thick.
Yeah, the way I like to like approach some of these things in a higher consciousness is to understand some of the whys and, kind of break down exactly what it is that's causing the fear, and it's almost like I'm running into a wall. But there was a word that you said, Matt, that really struck me. You said brave. And the word brave is so interesting because to be brave essentially means that you acknowledge a fear, but despite its hold on you, you act against it. And I don't know how this led me to the next thought, but which was, I get this feeling or understanding that the light and the dark are afraid of each other. The light is afraid to shine truth for fear that the dark will snuff it out. And the dark is afraid of the light for the same reason. And so if one is to take a deliberate action to not just be themselves, but to almost build a podium by which to stand behind and say, hey, I am not only being myself, but I am standing up for truth. I'm standing up for light against the dark. Sort of like this brave mindset that there's something to be fought against. Then it's like it attracts the attention of the dark and it attracts that snuffing force. So, like right now, we take action for truth, but in a anonymous way so as to not be snuffed out. And if we were to say, you know what? No, we're not afraid. We will speak our truth. We will be who we are, and we're not afraid to tell you who we are. It's like in that act alone, it's like an aggression against the dark. It's like, no, I am not afraid. And that's where we're activating like that brave kind of feeling. Now, yeah, it's because there's like an intention there. And in my experience, when I drop distortions, the distortion doesn't do that. It doesn't have like the intention for me to break through it. It just disappears. It's just like, oh yeah, I remember when I used to care about that, but now I'm not taking action from that place anymore. So is it like we have to reach that point where suddenly one day we're like, you know what? I just told everybody my full name and where I live and Or I just told the people in my locale about the secret identity that I've formed, but it didn't bother me because I'm not afraid anymore. I think that's probably ultimately what we're trying to find.
Oh, so you mean it's a like an it would be a natural thing when the time is right, rather than forcing something according to some beliefs. just this sort of like a natural falling off as part of the self-healing process, and that's not needed anymore. It's just
Right.
you'll feel natural. Yeah,
Right,
that's interesting.
That would make sense.
Because I'm this kind of person that's like, okay, if something is right, then I better do it because I don't want to be wrong. So in before, when I was listening to Matthew, I was like, maybe I know what I do. I brought up this topic. Now I maybe have to expose my whole identity because it's the right thing to do. But now, Caleb, you turn this around and actually doing that would be sort of an aggression instead of
right.
just allowing the external reality to catch up with the higher reality.
And I think of a man like Gandhi and the way that he stood up against authority. And it seems like he was, I mean, he was arrested, wasn't he? Like he went through all this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he wasn't afraid, and it was like the.
But was he doing it because he thought it was right?
Right.
Yeah, and Jesus is another one I've been thinking about a lot. It's how he went through what he did. And if his mission was a failure and he just gave up, or if his mission was that he was supposed to die and he just went through with it because it felt right. So we're coming into another aspect of this. It's like, should we act on things because they are right? Or should we just do what we feel is right in the moment? And it's like linear reality versus non-linear. So when we say like Gandhi, for example, if he did what he thought was right, was that according to like a linear view of the world? Or was he just going like, now I feel like doing this, and then he did it. Now I feel like doing that, improvising, right? And that's non-linear. And that's where we have that inner guidance step by step. It's not often we have inner guidance that is linear. That those are more like beliefs, systems. Belief systems are linear, and inner guidance is just very fresh in each moment.
Yeah, these ideas of right and wrong and being brave, like these are all ideas very anchored into duality. And it seems like the mud that we're treading through a bit here is so much of our cultural patterns are in that view of the world. And if you think about all the identities that would go away if there was no duality, I think that is part of the collective resistance as well. Like if there was no concept of bravery, because there's nothing to push up against, would people still get excited about watching a hockey game? And so it's our addiction to this worldly framework.
It's like we're always searching for meaning in everything. It's like whenever we lost that connection with our nodes, that sense of direction, our nodes have been sending us signals to try to find meaning in something, and that meaning continues to be almost like empty. Because yeah, this right and wrong, I think this has a lot to do with this right and wrong concept. Because literally everybody, maybe not literally everybody, but I would say probably 99% of the people of the world believe that what they are doing is right on a day-to-day basis. I get this quote from Seb Bunny. He said, everybody's just doing the best with what they know. And maybe an optimist view of the world, but it's like, I think that everybody's just trying to do right with what they know. Even the dark. Even on the dark side, maybe those people in the control structures believe that if we don't snuff out this light, this person that is speaking truth, that our society will collapse. If we don't maintain control of these people, we're all doomed, you know? Like the implications of not controlling these people are dark. Dark to a dark would be light, but it's like we're in the absence of understanding flow. We're trying to govern our lives by what we rationally believe to be right and wrong.
Well, maybe it's also that the hesitance to not have a pseudoname and stuff like that is actually the knowledge our node has of how disruptive it could be to the structures, like you mentioned, like the society breaking down. Like there's something in us that knows not to go too fast. Something like that. And that's the origin of the hesitance and the reason why we hang on to those bits of fear. It's like we know it's part of a bigger unfolding, a bigger process that has to happen piece by piece, node by node.
I just thought of the way like an apple tree grows, for instance. You know, it starts from a little seed, and then this tiny little green plant. Then as it gets older, it grows some bark, and the actual structure of the tree gets stronger and stronger until eventually it starts to bear fruit. But if you imagine that the first thing to grow was the apple itself, it wouldn't make it very far. It could get washed away, it could get stomped on by an animal, the dirt could rot it. I mean, or if it was on, you know, say a small sapling, it would just break the tree. You know, so for. So that logic makes a lot of sense too. It's we're talking about understanding flow, which is that there has to be like a definite order to the way that things unfold. I mean, you're kind of using it as like justification for the fears a little bit. Because yeah, because I agree. I mean, I think that there's definitely a place and probably a reason for the fears that we've all collectively been experiencing for so long. And it's almost like humanity is building the structure where we can finally blossom. But at some point, we still got to let go of those fears. We still got to be able to heal from them. But maybe like conversations like this one are us preparing for that healing. Because hopefully we're having this conversation with hundreds of people listening, and they can also have these considerations to see that, through these fears that are governing so many of our behaviors, that there is light, there is this opportunity for us to blossom.
Yeah, I really like that tree metaphor. I'm also seeing like it's like all these souls got together, and for a long time they've all been wearing masks, all these decorative personalities and ornamentation, and everyone's used to interacting with each other's masks. We're kind of like shy now that we're like starting to undress these masks. It's like maybe at first you only feel comfortable to show your hand and then your foot because you're unsure whether the relationships you've established w with the masks will translate after the masks have been taken off.
Yeah, in this metaphor, it's almost like the masks give us power, or we think that they give us power. So it's like we're afraid that if we take off our mask, but they don't, then they can use their mask to overpower us.
Well, it's interesting about these pseudonyms because it's like you're donning a mask in order to be more yourself.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's a different kind of mask. It's like in mainstream society, it's like it's a specific format of masks that they use with face expressions, body language. We have established accepted norms than that the next generation learned. So we learn to behave according to the culture and even like face expressions and to fit in. So those are masks made for the fiat world. And then the anonymous masks, it's like a different standard of a mask. It's like fiat standard and Bitcoin standard. So the anonymous masks have these different qualities, different intentions. It doesn't try to fit into the mainstream masks. It's just creating a new kind of standard where people can create their own face, their own movements, and allow everyone to be sovereign. And they can show as much or as little of themselves as they want. They can say where they live or they don't. And it's sort of like a reaction to the fiat society. It's almost like an anti-mask, where you swap the superficialness with depth.
So then what are these anti-masks protecting us from?
So Satoshi Nakamoto is a good example of this. Bitcoin probably wouldn't be possible without this kind of anti-mask. And we could see it from the perspective of evolution of consciousness. And like I said before, about in lower consciousness, we need to do things because we think we need to do things to survive. And if we look at it like this, then as long as people are in that consciousness, they're sort of not reliable because they will do things to survive. We just look at it as animals. And then if we see the higher consciousness and where we're going, and then, okay, in the higher consciousness, this will not be needed, but we are not there yet. This is the reality. This is how people act at this level of consciousness. They will try to keep their power, their money, and they will do anything to achieve their goals. So then it's quite logical that in the transition between lower consciousness to higher consciousness, that maybe we can't go straight into just pretending, oh, now it's a higher consciousness, now we should behave like higher consciousness, now we should do like in our visions. But actually looking at what levels of consciousness are still active on the planet, and then looking at what kind of behaviors are typical for those states of consciousness. And we need to include that in our calculations. And then if we see a path toward a brighter future where we could help to create that brighter future, because it's not so easy to get the visions, it's not easy to hold the visions, and it's not so easy to then spread the visions. But this is exactly what we need to do to get to the higher consciousness. And if we don't have people doing that, we will never get there. It's like seeds needs to be planted for a new consciousness to come into reality. And then I think we, or our node, our highest self, or it's like a teamwork, right? With the body and the mind and the soul, intuition, everything. And it's like that higher consciousness is working through all of us, trying to coordinate its own, its existence on this planet. So it's guiding us. If it's so intelligent, it wouldn't guide the people bringing the message into being hospitalized or tortured or killed. That would sort of be a failure. And that's what happened to Jesus here. It was just too few people at that time to help him out. And now we're at it again. So if we see this higher intelligence as a supercomputer, it's just sending signals through each and every one of us. First to wake up and then to realize some things, change our life around, and then start helping to bring about a world of joy, adventure, love, instead of the stuff that has been going on here for so long.
I think one thing that's really confusing about this topic is the fear of fear itself. Because I've almost feel like I've grown accustomed to almost consider all of my fears as illegitimate. And that either I need to be brave, so like this forceful pushback against fear. So I either need to be do that, or I have to heal it. And I have to heal that specific fear right now. And I don't think it's like that. Here's just like any other emotion that we have. We have become so accustomed to most of our lives being dominated by fear that we've really grown to really, really dislike it. Especially people who are on this journey, they can just see all of the fear in the world and just be so fed up with it and just be like, can't believe, you know, you can just see people walking around and doing so much of what they do out of fear, and just like wish we didn't have any of it, but still there is a use for it. Maybe we're running into that use finally as a mechanism for healing and understanding what is next to be healed, to not be afraid of the fear, but to understand and leverage it.
Yeah, actually what I have come to see about flow is that what I considered flow before then turn into fear, because I came to the end of that cycle and then I didn't want to do that anymore. But when I did it, I loved to do that. So when I moved from what I thought I was supposed to do and who I thought I was, and then the journey, then it's like, oh, okay, I'm like this. And it's like, and then I did that for a while. And like, oh, I was supposed to do this. Okay, now I found myself. And then I do that. And that was flow. I felt guided even. And then it comes to end of that cycle. And it's like, Now, how could I think it was this? Now it's this. Now I found it. So then letting go of that previous flow and saying, now that was because of fear. Because it was. I mean, it was usually something like, you know, fear-based action, like because you wanted to please the parents or something like that, or you wanted to fit in. But what we do then is that we create this amazing creation to sort of impress others with. And we enjoy doing it for a while. So it was created out of fear, but we enjoy doing it and we learn lots of stuff. And then we just peel back the layers. And when we realize that we don't like to do that anymore, then obviously we don't have flow with that anymore. We just need to let it go. And then we sort of sink into a deeper layer. And then that feels fresh until it doesn't. And from my experience, then we do end up in that deeper flow that is more, it's constant, it's timeless. And it doesn't matter if it's temporary or not, because it's timeless. So it's just this ever changing moment. But the way there is riding different freer patterns. And it was, if we don't do that, we don't figure them out. Like if we avoid those things and judge them as fears. So this saying, follow your bliss, it means to just do what we like to do. And when we do that, we figure out why we did it in the first place. And then it feels a little bit bad, maybe, if we think, oh, I thought this was my true deepest purpose, and then we have to let go of another one and another one. But I think we can enjoy that process and make lots of friends on the way, and it's really nothing that is a mistake. We can't make mistakes, which is just gaining more experiences. So it's like, okay, I would like to have a life on that planet. And maybe it was traumatic. But we can heal that. We can sort it out. It's just experiences. There's no mistakes.
Would you say the flow then is sort of harmonized with the fear?
How do you mean?
Is you're sort of looking back and noticing that some of the actions you were taking were informed by fear, but they also felt flowing. Trying to zoom out and see your fears were informed by this planet at this time and your experience in other lifetimes. Let's say, and then you come in, you act out the opposite of the fear in the form of flow, thereby sort of transmuting it.
Yeah.
As you're doing that, the frequencies are transforming in you, but also everywhere else. Because we're all in, our nodes are always talking to one another.
Yeah, I have come to see the beauty of these masks that we say that basically they're defense mechanisms that humans create. Like I used to think they were a pain in the neck, but now I see them as brilliant, creative manifestations. For me, it's amazing that we are able to create behaviors like that, because it's not easy, because I try to create them consciously. And that's not easy. So I'm sort of trying to learn from myself how, so I was in that tricky situation. And then somehow I magically created a defensive strategy, and with face expressions, with words, with concepts, to fit into that environment and to get those jobs and so on. And it's like, wow, how did I do that? But this is like manifestation power, like really advanced from my current perspective. Imagine using that for good, right? Now, this was defensive, so we sort of just block each other, block ourselves, and we make more problems in the end. But in higher consciousness, we will be able to use those abilities to express and to expand ourselves. And what you're talking about, Matthew, there, it's like when we are in the accumulation phase of defense mechanisms and survivor strategies, then we're just building, 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 and we're coming further and further away from our true self, and we just become this superficial version. We forgot who we are. But when we turn that around, it's like rewinding everything, and we can then enjoy those things, like, oh, now I feel like doing like this, and flow with that. And when we flow with that, it starts melting, because we don't need it anymore. So the rewinding process, maybe we can make it more happier. Maybe we can make it happier. It's been so much suffering, pain, detox, shit, and maybe when more and more people come deeper into this, it will just, we will be able to enjoy that process more and not feel bad about playing out old patterns, but you see it as a natural part of the unfolding. And it's just some ideas I got right now. Like the detox process, it has this sort of heaviness over it, and like it's tough, it's difficult, it's something you have to do to be free. And maybe it's really similar to, you have to work hard to earn money, you know, that kind of limiting beliefs, and that we are creating new light models for the healing process. So for every person that goes through detox, it maybe will be easier and easier and more fun. And it's just this turning the corner, like going from defending all our strategies and living in fear completely, and then waking up for something, and then oh, now I should get on this next process. Luckily, all of these guys have done it already, and they say they can just, I can enjoy it. So then it's like, yeah, first you just do what you like, and don't worry about the things that you had been worried about. And as we get more and more abundance, because many times the financial fear is causing a lot of delays and extra pain and trouble in the detox process. So as Bitcoin comes on the scene, maybe we can make the detox process really like a joyful adventure. Just like revisiting all the defense mechanisms and the things we did to be popular and so on.
Right, and seeing them for the genius that they are. I mean, these things, they were created so naturally on basically subconscious desires, and most of which were the subconscious desire for love and acceptance, which is really love in the end, at the end of the day.
Yeah, really resonate with that idea. Yeah, I had to accumulate the skill set of masks in the fear zone to tap into why it had to be with fear. To develop those masks, and then to use that toolkit to bring into the higher consciousness.
And the difference in higher consciousness is that we don't do it to get something. That's maybe it was easier to create it from this kind of need, lack. We just had to do it. So we just found the resources within ourselves to just do it. And in higher consciousness, we come from this place of neutrality where everything is perfect or the way it is. We don't have that motivation or the need because we are neutral. But then it's something else that steps in. And that signal that I talked about before, it's this divine guidance that we get from the collective spirit. That gives us our little script, where it's like we get that signal and we interpret that with everything we are, and we express that signal, playing our part, being that cell in the body is doing what we are supposed to do. And then what we are supposed to do, we are supposed to create things, manifest things. It's just a very different motivation than from survival. It's this, and you're co-creating with the universe. You don't have to do anything, so it's no pressure. It's more like a joy of being alive, the joy of creation without expecting anything, is creating. And I think when we get used to it, we really do enjoy it. And we want to do it again and again. So in the beginning, it's difficult and confusing because we don't get anything from doing it. But then when we just, okay, I'll just do this. Sort of surrender to the universe and just do something. And then it's like, wow, that felt amazing. I want to do that again. And then like, okay, how did I do that again? I just did something. So what should I do now? And then it comes another signal, and it's maybe addictive is not the right word, but it's similar. It's like this feeling of just creating more and more. It's like getting a kick. It's this kick of being carried by the universe, being carried by a force larger than ourselves. And to just be carried or guided. And then sometimes we drop it, forget it. That feeling, I remember, how good that felt, when it felt like everything was at the right place. And it was just in tune with everything. Well, so I think it sounds like a nice challenge. I mean, to why not enjoy all parts of creation? Because I know that we enjoyed the destruction, you know, when we create lots of lives and we were greedy and we were, so that's the expansion. And then when we have to pay for all of that, when we have to consolidate all those experiences, this is usually considered a painful experience. When we have to go through life and life and memory, and like, oh, why did I do that? And heal all those mistakes, so to speak, that we did everywhere across the creation. And we're bringing it all home, becoming whole again. And maybe we need a new story for that part, the detox part, the consolidation. And why not enjoy both? Celebrate, just like we're celebrating spring and we celebrate autumn, but they are opposite, but they are all part of the same thing. All right, yes. It's been a long, nice conversation. Very interesting. Thank you very much for joining me to tackle this challenging topic. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Any last thoughts before we go, guys?
Nothing for me. Thank you very much. I enjoyed going through the sludge of this topic for sure.
Yeah, I like this. Learning to treat all aspects of yourself equally and see the meaning and beauty of what has been called the darker elements. Seeing that as part of the bigger cycle and process. Thank you.